copyright Forum of Christian Leaders. The contents contained on this website are solely for your own individual, non-commercial, and informational use. Any other use is strictly prohibited without our express prior written consent. See the full copyright disclosure at focalonline.org.
I want to appeal from a slightly different angle, to do all the stuff he was talking about, but to ensure that in our evangelism, we make sure there's a proper balance. And here's why. If you were to take wherever you meet as a church, it might be that you own your own building or you rent a space or whatever. But if you take a square kilometer around your building, the range of people there will be enormous. And if you think of all the members of your church who are spread out across your city or whatever it is that you that you're living, within 100 square meters of their homes, again, the range of people will be enormous. And we cannot hope to have just one standard way of doing evangelism to reach all those folk. It's simply not possible. So from a leadership angle, what we have to think about is how can we produce a wide range of different things that through the sum total of all of them, we begin to start hitting the people that we're trying to target as our target audience. And that is particularly the case here in Europe. I grew up, just to give you my own background, in Africa. Ethiopia was where I spent my childhood, my early teenage years. And back when I was a young child, Ethiopia had about, I guess, 500,000 evangelical Christians. It now has 18 million. And in Addis Ababa, which is the capital, you can have a traffic jam on a Sunday, because folk are literally blocking the streets trying to get to church because there's a huge spiritual interest. I now live just outside of Glasgow, and on a Sunday the streets are dead. Because like I suspect the situations where you're coming from, the vast bulk of people in my culture do not care. And we're on this journey with people who try to reach out to them, focusing on our communities with a range of people who will go from people who are either hardened atheists or they follow some other religious grouping or they just do not care at all, right up to the people who we might have now in our churches who have a significant interest and everything in between. Now that wide range of people, that's what makes our evangelism efforts difficult. So we need to think, how can we do lots of different things that will try to reach out to those group of people? Now, obviously, in all of our churches, there are going to be things that will hold us back from variety. A big thing is gifting. You might have a small church, might not have many gifted people. So lots of the ideas that even Rennie was talking about, you're already thinking that's not really possible because we just don't have the gift there. Experience, too. If what your church has seen and the members of your church have seen, if that's the sum total of their evangelism experience, then any new ideas you give them could terrify them. Likewise, a confidence issue. There may be those outgoing, dynamic, evangelistic types in your church who really want to go out there and win the world for Jesus. Most folk will not be like that. And the lack of confidence holds them back, as well as their own context. Wherever your church is located, wherever your mission field is, will determine what you are able to do or not. Is it an inner city location? Is it a university town? Is it a rural area? A conservative culture, an outgoing culture? Is it quite international? Whatever context you have is going to be a determining factor. But everything boils down to, I think, one of two options. The first option, which I'll spend the first half talking about, is the church-based stuff. And Renee was referring to that kind of a thing where you bring people in, whether it's to a building that you own or to a premises that you rent, and you do some kind of activity with them, or you just do non-church-based stuff where the strategy you have is dependent not on any organized group activities you do, but on individuals being empowered to get out there and to do what God leads them to do in their own context. And I'll talk about that in the second session. Now, for me, I gravitate very much towards the second type. And that's because personally, by disposition, by gifting, I'm an evangelist. So For me, the opportunities don't come primarily, say, in an alpha group. For me, the opportunities come primarily if I'm standing at a bus stop or I've gone with friends of mine to a soccer match and the casual conversations that I have, that's where, for me, the gospel gets out. But that will only be for some people in your church. Nevertheless, those are the two kind of options. And when we have our first breakout group, I want you to discuss two things. Number one, where do you think the balance is in your church? Is it more that kind of activity-based stuff? Or is it more the empowering individuals where they are to be gospel-focused? And why is does your church lean in one direction or the other? Where do the strengths lie? So that's one thing you can discuss. And then secondly, you can maybe ask the question, your particular context, what do you really feel will make the decisive difference? Activity-based or empowering individual-based? And why is that? You can say that within your groups. But let me just, before we go into breakout groups, talk about some of the individual activities that I think you could be thinking about. But before we even get there, some very obvious stuff. What are the advantages and limitations? The church-based stuff, obviously you can have control. Rennie was talking about some of the groups that he managed. Fantastic. And one of the good things for the church members who organize a group like that, they can feel safe there because Christians will be the majority. They can control the atmosphere. It's their territory. They're at home there. But there are some limitations of activity-based stuff. It requires attendance. I think in that first session, one of the guys asked a question, how do you make these activities meaningful to non-Christians, to people who need the gospel, rather than just making it a group of Christians getting together? The reality is that the more you lean towards church-based activity, the bigger problem you will have with utterly unchurched people. Because I suspect in all of our contexts, it doesn't matter how creative the stuff that you do is, you're probably, if your context is like my context, you're probably just going to have a marketplace that's maybe 15% of your community, maybe 20 if you really work hard, not a lot more than it requires attendance. It means that visitors will be, as soon as they walk into that activity, will be slightly guarded. One thing, by the way, I do with my students to illustrate this is, we have in my mission a Bible college here on site, and every year I take my students to the local mosque. And I don't give them much of an intro to what life will be like in the mosque. I know the imam in the mosque. They don't. I know what's going to be happening when we walk into that building and we get a tour around the mosque. They don't. And I just want to monitor their faces, their voice intonation, their body language. Now, they're all committed Christians. And when I say to them, look, we're going to go and visit our local mosque, I can immediately see what their facial expressions are telling me. And their pulse begins to beat faster as we walk in. Now, actually, they're in a safe place because I know the local imam. They're quite friendly towards us. But merely walking into a foreign spiritual space that you're not used to can be difficult. Now, again, I don't care how creative your events are or how much you've done pre-work to make people, non-Christians, feel at home coming to whatever it is that you're doing. They will still feel a certain guardedness until they really get to know not just you, but your whole church. Now, I could bring my best friend along who's not a Christian to my church event. He knows me really well. He's comfortable with me, but there are 60, 70 people who he doesn't know. He's not comfortable with them. Those are the big drawbacks. Non-church-based, big advantages. It's where people are. The gospel is, to use Rennie's expression, it's incarnated. But there are limitations. You send people out there, and I'll think about this in the second session, there are big dangers. You're asking your people to put themselves in that danger zone so the gospel can go out. Gospel conversation need to be created. That takes training. And you can end up in a situation where if the big focus of your evangelism is out there in the world with individual members doing it and not really relating it to the life of your church community, you could have what I've had on a number of occasions where non-Christians are reached with the gospel, they've become Christians. And then when the news is broken to them, by the way, to be a Christian, you need to be part of a Christian community. They ask the question, well, why? I mean, I'm enjoying just having this conversation with you about Jesus. I'm enjoying my early spiritual life. Why do I have to spoil it all by joining this bunch of weird Christians? I'm interested in Jesus, not the church. You can have those kind of problems. So we'll think about that more in the second half. But let me just, in 2 minutes, run through some very quick things about church-based stuff that I think also helps with the balance. There's the balance of what we do when we bring people into our territory against the balance of reaching people where they are. But even if we do focus on stuff around what our church is doing in our building, in our own safe zone, you need to really unpack that and ask, how can we create balance to still meet as wide a group of people and meet their needs as we possibly can? Take one of my bugbears, evangelistic services. In the UK, which is where I'm operating, a lot of evangelical churches have a weekly, they call it a family service. And you could visit 1,000 churches right across the UK that run family services every Sunday morning to try to reach their community. Again, they're only getting that 5-10% of their community who will be willing to come to a service. And by and large, these services don't do very much at all. They are effective in terms of discipling new Christians or giving kind of gentle, easy access Bible teaching for people who have got a bit of a spiritual interest, but they don't do an awful lot for real evangelism. So if you do want to embark on kind of regular services, then you need to think about it. Is this something you do every week? Or probably my view would be you don't. It's the occasional thing. I'm really not convinced, maybe you can convince me of this, but I'm really not convinced of the value of a kind of a weekly family type seeker friendly service, just because once you've reached the very few people who are willing to come to a service like that, then you've reached exhaustion point. And you're going to go no further. The value of weekly service, I think, is very, very limited. However, if you make them occasional events and put big effort into it, so it's a special kind of thing, and theme it, then I think it grows in its significance. For example, a few months ago, we had Brexit here in the UK. It's not something I celebrate. I'm very anti-Brexit, I have to say, because I'm very much of a European. But lots of churches use the national conversation of Brexit to suddenly have Brexit-style services, to look at the gospel through the lens of the tension and division the whole Brexit conversation was causing. And guess what? Some of those services were utterly packed out because they spoke into the national mood and linked what they were trying to do evangelistically with the national mood, and it suddenly becomes relevant. And services that were empty of non-Christians for week after week after week suddenly became full because it was a special event. So evangelistic services, they have their place in a limited fashion, but only if you really think through what you're doing. Renee talked about event evangelism. I don't need to say too much more, because what he said about event evangelism was, I think, brilliant. But what is your goal? I see no point in putting on any event unless at the end of the day you have a clear set of criterion and then you work backwards. Who are we trying to reach? It's not going to be the whole community, because your event has to be focused. So who are those specific people you're trying to reach? And once you have that target in mind, then work back and organize your entire event based on a specific goal-oriented group of people that you're trying to reach. Age-centered clubs, again, think about what it is we want to do here. Most churches, when you think about age-centered clubs, they think about a youth club or a kids club. They have their place in the church's activity, but that's not the only group of people. What about a club for pressurized professionals? Or a club for people who are retired? Or a club for people who are dealing with bereavement or caring for people with significant chronic illnesses? Events that you have that are going to attract people and be events that build friendship. It doesn't just have to be a youth club. It can be a whole range of different people who need the kind of friendship and sense of community that the church offers. And all of these kind of clubs are a way of developing a relationship and then much later on down the line, bringing in the gospel. So cover the bases, use your imagination. And then Rennie also mentioned courses. Just before we break into our groups, let me just say something about courses. The big question you need to ask when we're thinking about courses that we use for evangelism is not, do we use Alpha or do we use Christianity Explored? Actually, those questions are simple and straightforward. Just use whatever materials you find helpful. Actually, you might even want to write your own materials. I tend to write my own stuff because that's more suitable for my particular socioeconomic grouping where my church is based. But your resources are not the main issue. The main issue is who are the people in your church you're going to use, because the chemistry you have to create to make a course like this work, the chemistry is not determined by the resources you use. It's by the people who sit around the dinner table with the folk that you bring in. That's the issue. And that's where we really need to be smart. I have found through bitter experience that the people that you get from your church to sit at a table with the non-Christians who are invited, they will either make the whole thing work or kill it stone dead. So who are you going to invite? And I would actually ban some church members from coming to an Alpha course or Christianity Explored course. Why? Because they're the wrong type of people. They're either way too over-enthusiastic and pushy, or they're quiet and retiring and just won't talk. And suddenly what purports to be a useful evangelistic course ends up being not very effective because the people you brought along from your church have killed the whole thing off. So think about what are we trying to achieve and who do we use to make this most marketable? Now, we're going to go into the groups just now. Andrew, if that's okay. And those two questions that I put at the very beginning, where would you lean towards, church-based stuff or community-based stuff, and why? And then if you think about your particular setting right now, as you look out in your community, what is going to be more effective for you right now? Because that might decide how you go in the future. So let's go into groups just now, please, Andrew. Okay, looks like folk are starting to come back now.
Yes, we're back.
Okay, thank you. Well, thank you for going so promptly and coming back so promptly. I should just apologize, by the way, for the speed that I had to go through all those slides. 15 minutes isn't very much time. And I'm going to give a shameless plug just now, because all the stuff that I was mentioning in that first half, I've put in a book which just came out about 6 weeks ago. It's called Learning to Share the Good News. And a lot of the material you'll find in that book, I'm sure it's available on Amazon as well as through other Christian distributors as well. Learning to Share the Good News, it'll cover that balanced approach and some of the detail I was giving about how to run different events. It's all included there. I want to move from that kind of church-based stuff, using your own facility, to thinking more about that idea of releasing people and switching your energy, your focus, your strategy away from stuff that you do as a corporate church to empowering individuals where they are. Now, sometimes you kind of have to prepare people for being out there in the big bad world. And one last event that I will mention, which is a church-based, a kind of a church-based event, but which leads to more community involvement, is what I just call halfway events. And these are events which, in their organizational structure, don't have any proclamation content at all. They're simply just a way of either getting your church and its name known, or getting people in your church to mix more freely with people who are unchurched. Very often the best halfway events are ones that you yourselves don't organize. In my town, for example, the local council puts on a street fair every year, and the main street is blocked off and people can get stalls. And it's not a religious event at all. It's just a way of kind of showing off all that takes place in our town. And as a church, we'd sometimes get a stall there and do face painting and sell books, not just Christian books, but a range of different books, and have a variety of different activities that can take place in the space of that small stall. Now, there is no way of, in a sense, getting the gospel across easily in that kind of a context, but that's not the point. The point is that the whatever logo your church has, whatever name your church uses, it gets that name out there in a very informal, casual way. But it also puts your people in a context where they just have to, in everyday life, have conversations with people. So those halfway events are not evangelistic proclamation events per se. They are just a way of getting the name out there and also getting your people to talk. But I want to think about that whole issue of non-church-based events is the wrong word to use, but non-church-based proclamation, because I think particularly in Europe, where our population is so secular and so de-churched, and the spiritual interest levels are so low, I think it is the future. I really believe that. And doing things like an Alpha course or a Christianity Explored course or some kind of house group or whatever, that is the end product of what takes place in community. But it's not a simple thing to move your church approach to being out there in the community. Given the difficulties, you'll remember what Jesus said to his disciples in Matthew 10:6. He said, "I'm sending you as sheep amongst wolves." Now, that can genuinely be the case. When you tell people in your church that the responsibility for evangelism is not yours as a leader or a pastor, or even the whole group as a church, but rather it's the responsibility of each individual, and it's on their shoulders. They have to go out there. They have to make the contacts. They need to be incarnated. That can be a difficult message. There are in all of our churches people who are outwardly looking. They're courageous. They're natural evangelists. Plenty of people who aren't that way, and for whom putting responsibility on their shoulders is a terrifying prospect. And they're in situations where it's really difficult being evangelists. You're saying to them, go and talk to your neighbor. What if your neighbor is really hostile? Go speak to your family members who aren't Christians. What if your family members are massively hostile? One of my best friends who witnessed to me and led me to become a convert, he witnessed to me when we were both teenagers, and it's through him that I became a Christian. When he got saved, and he got saved about 18 months before I became a Christian, when he got saved and told his father he'd become a Christian, his father got so angry with him. They lived in a farm, and he kicked him out of the house, and he had to sleep for weeks in the barn because his father was so so furious with his son becoming a Christian. It was a huge thing for him to do. And I currently have some Christian friends whose families are so hostile that when they begin conversations about Christ in their family, it leads to huge rows. It's really difficult. There are difficulties. Jesus does send us as sheep amongst wolves, and we mustn't underestimate the challenge that it'll be for people. And there are some dangers, not just physical dangers, I think, but spiritual dangers as well. we enjoy the physical security of being together as church, and we grow through that. And I'm not suggesting that we drop that at all. But the more we encourage people to leave the safety and the security of our church buildings and our church services and our church gatherings to be out there and to really give time, quality time, to be with people, to share their lives with people. And these are people who are who may have no spiritual interest, but that's what's involved here. The more vulnerable those people will find themselves in, it is not easy. I don't know how your countries are at the moment with the whole lockdown, but it's been really interesting in UK churches, because we haven't been able to meet physically as churches, and I guess that's the case for most people in Europe. I get regular phone calls from Christians who are already feeling that sense of loneliness. Now, they can tune into a church service online, just like we're doing here through Zoom. It's not the same. It's not the same. And as I was preparing last night for this, a guy messaged me about 11:30 last night, and he said, can you phone me, please? He said, is it too late for you to phone me? And I messaged him back to say, why? He said, I'm just feeling that sense of loneliness. And this is a young guy who's a committed Christian. He loves Christ, but his church has been in lockdown, as every other UK church has been. It's now into the 9th week. And after 9 weeks of not having a physical gathering with his fellow Christians, he's at breaking point, absolute breaking point. Now, he's tuned in every Sunday to an online service. Not the same. Not the same. And he comes from a family where there are no Christians in his family. His neighborhood has very few Christians living there. His social circle has very few Christians. He's already at breaking point. And that's a committed Christian who's in his early 20s. Now, to encourage our people to leave the security, and much of the evangelism we've been doing has been within that secure setting, to leave that security and to go out there and to use church more as a, we're here to be built up in our church services to gain spiritual strength so we can go out to the world and bring the good news. For you and me as evangelists, that's fine. For lots of folk in our church, we are placing them in danger, and we must not underestimate the challenging situations that we are putting people in. If we change the focus to you get out there and reach people for Jesus. Now, it's the way to go, but it's a big deal for people who aren't like us, who aren't natural evangelists or naturally outgoing people. So what do we do with this? How do we move forward? Well, several things. Recruitment is key here. And for me, the best way of recruiting people is to say this. I look out over my congregation and I say to them, all of you have a circle of people. It might be your neighbors. It might be members of your family. It might be some of your social circle. It might be people in your workplace. But there are people that you meet on a daily basis who I will never come across and who will never come to any church event. And you're the only person who's placed there by God to reach those people. That has to be part of our recruitment drive. And I ask people, I want you to count the number of people and write it down, write their names down, the number of people in all those contexts that you know you have a natural relationship with. But if you say to those people, come along to church, you know they won't come. Now, God has placed you in that situation. You're responsible. Now, what do you do to reach them? So recruitment, first of all, then envisioning them. And I think we need to tell our people stories or get them to share stories with each other about successes they've had in simple gospel conversations. Now, those kind of stories encourage Christians. It doesn't need to be a story that says, you know, I met this guy, I shared the gospel with him, and he became a Christian. Those kind of stories are very, very rare. It can simply be, I was speaking to my neighbor and we just happened to begin a conversation about spiritual matters or about the afterlife. And I told the person I was a Christian. Simple as that. But help them through sharing stories to see that each of them can take a small step. And as those small steps build, it leads to conversion. Most folk who become Christians, they don't become Christians at their first time hearing the good news. They become Christians because they've had 50 or 60 very small conversations that have built and built and built and accumulated. And eventually, 2 or 3 or 4 years down the line, they trust Christ. But each one of those tiny conversations have played a huge role in building that momentum that leads them to become a Christian. It's those kind of stories, so envisioning them. And then thirdly, giving people support. I've encouraged folk, why don't you go and speak to your neighbor, speak to that person at work, and then come and tell me about that conversation you've had, and I'll pray for you. And actually set up prayer groups to support those folk who are trying to do evangelism. There's one church I speak at sometimes in Korea, in Seoul, in South Korea, which really encourages me in this regard. They're a church of about 200 people, and they do not own their own building. They meet in downtown Seoul, which is a gigantic city, and buying a church building is impossible. It's too expensive. Even finding a big enough place to rent is difficult. They rent a doctor's surgery for 2 hours on a Sunday morning, and that's it. They have no other church meeting of any description. And they don't run any kind of church events per se because they've got no facility to do so. Their entire evangelism program is based on individuals being out there sharing the gospel. But what they do is they meet together in homes to share stories about what God is doing through their witness. And they publish a list of, here's the conversations that we're having. And that list is sent out to all the church members. And they have little details about, this is where this person is at, and these are the conversations I've had with them. This is where they are in the scale of coming closer and closer and closer towards maybe taking a real interest in the gospel. And on any given Sunday, when they send out or give out this list of names that they all have to pray about as church members, on any given Sunday, when they give out that list, it could contain 500, 600, 700 names of people. That's the people who the church members have live contact with in their everyday lives. And that's how they pray. Now, their entire evangelistic strategy is based on personal evangelism, individuals doing evangelism, because they have no building. They have no way of organizing group events. So it's all done by individuals. But they support each other through prayer, and they meet in their homes to pray with each other and to share with each other their stories and to encourage each other to keep going in terms of doing this one-on-one evangelism. So support. And then finally, coordination. As you encourage individuals in your church to go out there and to be witnesses for Christ, appoint somebody in your church to coordinate all that effort and ensure that all that wide range of contacts are being prayed for and encouraged. And if one of those church members is struggling, they're having a bad week, it hasn't gone well, who's going to get alongside them and pray with them and encourage them to keep going? Recruit, envision, support, and coordinate. One last thing I just mentioned, and it's the whole issue of discipleship. That problem I started with at the very beginning in the first session. If the evangelism focus moves towards, or at least gives some credence towards individuals doing evangelism out there, you will find people who are unchurched folk who our church members are connecting with, developing an interest, and growing in their friendship with that one person, but still not necessarily thinking about church. And I have seen situations where friends of mine who are great evangelists out there doing their kingdom work, and they brought people to faith in Christ, and when they introduce the idea of church to those people, it's a big move. It's a big move to try to bring those folk into the body of the church. That doesn't happen automatically. They may have a friendship with that church member who's been doing the witnessing. They have no relationship, no connection with your church. That's a big danger. And so you need to find ways, as individuals in your church are doing their evangelism out there in the community, find ways of bridging that gap and helping them in discipleship, so that the converts, the people who they're interested in the gospel, can engage with the church in some way. And it might be that that's when you begin to use events, not so much to interest folk in the gospel, but events to get those folk who are interested in the gospel, because our church members are out there being witnesses to them, events that can connect them with the body of the church and bring them into a kind of a discipleship relationship with church life. Andrew, I'm going to stop there because it's time for breakout groups again. Do you want to break out into groups again and think about two things? Number one, how will you, in your context, mobilize people to see that they're responsible individually for evangelism, not just the church as a whole? And then secondly, how will you support them in their work and keep them alive spiritually, keep them burning bright as coals, so they can continue that momentum in their spiritual life? So let's break into groups. Just to summarize, there are two options, church-based stuff or non-church-based stuff. My personal preference is to use the non-church-based stuff as the key. If individuals in our church can be envisioned where they are with the context they have very naturally, if they can be envisioned and empowered to share the good news, we will reach a much, much bigger group of people than if we just use church-based events. As I said before, it doesn't matter how creative those events are. At the most, in Europe, I think we'll get 15 to 20% of the marketplace, at the most, coming to an event, however brilliant is organized. My concern is for the 80%. How are we going to reach them? I think empowering individuals and sending them out as sheep amongst wolves is the only way. There are dangers, but that is the way forward. And I encourage you to think about having that as a major evangelistic strategic thrust as we move forward.